8 September 2213. The language does not have adjectives superlative enough to capture what we have seen and experienced. At this moment, our family is on board a driverless shuttlecraft no larger than a bus. The cigar-shaped way station we passed through is still visible, but just barely out the dome window at the rear. To our left, the cylindrical spacecraft we call Rama, our home for 13 years, is headed in a direction slightly different from ours. 5 hours ago, our Rama spacecraft came to a stop and lined up behind two vehicles in an amazing queue. On the screen in the white room, we could see a spinning starfish, about 1/10 the size of Rama, and ahead of the starfish, a giant wheel with a hub and spokes. The starfish was entering the way station, where it was being handled by gantries and attachments, when a loud whistle summoned us topside in Rama. We reached the surface and were astonished to find all the lights of Rama on. Rama had changed the sequence of night and day that has prevailed for the past 13 years. And there was music as well. At least, I guess you could call it music. It sounded like millions of tiny bells, and it seemed to be coming from everywhere. Richard, who had the best pair of binoculars, spied something flying south toward us. "It's the aliens," he shouted. He turned to me. "I just remembered something. I visited the aliens in their new home in the north while I was on my odyssey." "Do you have any idea what's going to happen to us?" I asked. "We watched the aliens head straight for New York. There were 50 or 60 of them. Some of them dove to the surface while the others hovered above." "Come on, Daddy," Katie yelled. "Let's go." Before I could raise any objection, father and daughter were off in a sprint. The rest of us headed back to our lair to watch the starfish being processed in the way station. It had already left the way station when Richard and Katie returned. "Start packing," Richard said breathlessly as soon as he entered the white room. "We're leaving. The avians flew back out of their lair carrying belongings that they're obviously taking with them on a journey. Then, as we were coming back here, a vehicle descended from one of Rama's entrances and landed. It's up there on the ice waiting for us. We're getting out of here." "How do you know the vehicle's ours?" Michael asked. "It has 8 seats and rooms for our bags," Katie replied. "Who else would it be for?" "Did you see any octospiders?" Patrick asked. "No," answered Katie, "but we did see 4 mammoth planes. We think they were carrying the octospiders, don't we, Dad?" Richard nodded. I took a deep breath and told everyone to pack only what was absolutely necessary. We took our baggage up and loaded it on the vehicle. An hour later, we had boarded the vehicle and were ready to go. Richard pressed a flashing red button, and our vehicle lifted off the ground. Less than an hour after that, we had transferred from Rama's interior to the shuttle in which we are now being transported. We have left Rama, and I am feeling strangely emotional. But after all, Rama was my home. I gave birth to 5 children there, and I matured there. I think I'll close here. I'm starting to cry. Nicole awakened very slowly from an extremely vivid dream.
"Are you going to just lie there forever?" Her daughter Katie, who had been asleep on a bed to the right of her, was already up and bending over her.
"I'm a little groggy," Nicole admitted. "How long did we sleep this time?"
"A day short of 5 weeks," her daughter Simone answered, sitting up on the bed to Nicole's left.
"I'm so full of energy," Katie said. "I want to run, jump, wrestle with Patrick. I hope this was our last long sleep."
"The Eagle said it should be," Nicole replied. "They're hoping that they will have enough data now."
Nicole stood up, stretched, and gave Katie a kiss. Then she eased over and hugged Simone. Although not quite 14, Simone was almost as tall as Nicole. Simone always seemed calm and serene, in marked contrast to Katie.
"Why didn't Ellie come with us for this test?" Katie asked. "She's a girl, too, but it seems she never has to do anything."
She's only 4 years old, Katie, and according to the Eagle, Ellie's too small to give them any of the critical data they still need.
Nicole and her daughters put on their tight body suits and transparent helmets and headed for the door. If they had not seen the room outside their compartment several times before, they would have stopped in amazement and stared. Stretching in front of them was a huge laboratory that looked like a mixture of a hospital operating room and a semiconductor manufacturing plant on the planet Earth. There were no walls or cubicles dividing the room, yet its rectangular dimensions were clearly sub-allocated to different tasks. The room was busy with robots either analyzing data from one set of tests or preparing for another set. Katie walked over to the entrance to a compartment where an active monitor on the exterior wall told her that an experiment was underway inside. She pounded on the metal with her gloved hand.
"Stop that,"
said a robot, composed of big rectangular chunks that the children thought looked like toy blocks.
"Your test is over. The exit is over there where the lights are flashing."
Nicole tugged firmly on Katie's arm, and the girl reluctantly followed. The three of them reached the long passageway that connected the laboratory to the main transportation center. A small vehicle was waiting. They entered the car, which carried them further down the passageway.
"Do you agree with Daddy that we're having all these sleep tests in preparation for some kind of space voyage?" Simone asked.
"It seems likely," said Nicole. The car stopped. Nicole and her two daughters exited into the engineering module's main transportation center, which contained the tubes that ferried equipment, robots, and living creatures back and forth among the engineering, habitation, and administration modules, the three huge spherical complexes that were the primary components of the node. As soon as they disembarked from the car, they heard a voice on their helmet receivers.
"Take the escalator on your right to your tube. You will be departing in 4 minutes."
Soon they were hurtling at full speed in a bullet-shaped transparent vehicle down the long, narrow cylinder that led to the habitation module. Katie had her tiny binoculars out.
"I want to be ready," she said. "They always go by so fast."
Several minutes later, she announced,
"It's coming!"
And the three women peered to see another vehicle approaching on the opposite side of the track. In an instant, it was upon them, and the humans had little more than a glimpse of the occupants of the vehicle heading for the engineering module they had just left.
"Wow," said Katie. "Did you see those things? There must have been at least 8 of them, and there were 2 different types, one set was pink, the other gold, and those long, stringy tentacles were like gossamer. That was really something."
Nicole, Simone, and Katie's reunion with their family in their apartment in the habitation module was a cause for great celebration. Exhausted by all the excitement, after a while everyone retired to bed, with the exception of Nicole, who was unable to sleep. Although the apartment itself had no windows, the small atrium just off the entrance hall had an exterior window that offered a breathtaking view of the other two vertices of the ensemble called the Node. Nicole moved into the atrium and gazed out the window. A shuttle vehicle similar in shape to the one that had brought them to the Node 13 months before was approaching the Habitation Module Transportation Center.
"What kind of wonderful creatures do you contain?" Nicole thought. "And are they as astonished as we were when we first arrived?"
Nicole would never forget her own first views of the Node. After leaving Rama, which proceeded to the way station for processing, the shuttle had continued on. As the family looked out the windows of the shuttle, the Node had appeared, a gigantic equilateral triangle with the glowing transparent spheres that contained the three modules at its vertices. The modules had many levels, on which a great deal of activity was taking place. The long transportation tubes connecting the modules formed the three sides of the triangle. Even their experience with Rama had not prepared the family for the majesty of this incredible engineering creation. When their shuttle had docked at the Node, its doors had opened and a disembodied voice had said,
"Welcome. Please proceed straight ahead. You are in a transportation complex. The vehicle that will take you to your section of the habitation module is waiting on a lower level.
How does it know English? Simone had asked in a whisper. Are there other people here?
Richard had laughed nervously. Unlikely. Probably this place has been in contact with Rama in some way and has a master language algorithm. A few minutes later, they had entered their new home for the first time. They had been overwhelmed. Each of the children had a separate room. Michael had a suite for himself, and Richard and Nicole's master bedroom even had a king-sized bed. There were four bathrooms, a kitchen, a dining room, and even a playroom.
Welcome.
Another disembodied voice had greeted them.
We hope everything in your apartment is satisfactory. If it is not, please tell us. On your kitchen counter is a white button. We will assume that everything said by an individual after pushing the white button is directed at us.
Katie had run into the kitchen and pushed the button.
I have a question. Just who are you anyway?
A tiny delay of maybe 1 second had preceded the answer.
We are the collective intelligence that governs the node. We are here to assist you, to make you more comfortable, and to supply you with the essentials for living. We will also, from time to time, ask you to perform certain tasks that will help us to understand you better.
Nicole could no longer see the shuttle she had been watching out the window. Actually, she had been so deeply submerged in her memories that she had been oblivious to the newcomers. Now, in her mind's eye, she imagined an assemblage of strange creatures disembarking on the docking platform and hearing with amazement the voice address them in their native language.
The experience of wonder must be universal, Nicole thought, belonging to all conscious chemicals.
Her eyes focused on the distant administration module. She wondered, what goes on over there?
We hapless creatures move back and forth between the habitation and engineering modules. All our activities appear to be logically orchestrated, but by whom? And for what? Why has someone brought so many species to this artificial world?
The family was just finishing a breakfast of buttermilk pancakes and maple syrup, courtesy of the node's excellent computer chef, when the doorbell rang. Nicole opened the door.
May I come in?
The eagle asked with what Nicole had come to recognize as a smile.
I would like to talk to you, your husband, and Mr. O'Toole.
The eagle's face was mesmerizing. His head had two large powder blue eyes on either side of a protruding grayish beak. He was tall and shaped like a human being from the neck down. His arms and torso, however, were covered with small, tightly woven charcoal gray feathers. The eagle led the adults to a conference room across the hall. He began by saying,
Since our first encounter, you have repeatedly asked me questions about what you are doing here, and I have not given you direct answers. Now that your final step of sleep tests are completed, successfully I might add, I have been empowered to inform you about the next phase of your mission. I have also been given permission to tell you something about myself. As all of you have suspected, I am not a living creature, at least not by your definition. I was created by the intelligence that governs the node to interface with you on sensitive issues. Our early observations of your behavior indicated a reluctance on your part to interact with the disembodied voices. We have now entered the most important period of your stay here. The spaceship you call Rama is over at the hangar undergoing major refurbishment and engineering redesign. You human beings will now take part in the redesign process, for some of you will be returning with Rama to the solar system in which you originated.
Richard and Nicole started to interrupt, but the eagle said,
Let me finish first. Notice that I did not say you will be going back to Earth. If the nominal plan succeeds, those of you who do return will interact with other human beings in your solar system, but not on your home planet. Mrs. Wakefield, you will definitely be traveling again in Rama. We will let you and the rest of your family decide who will accompany you on the journey. You can go alone if you choose, leaving everyone else here at the node, or you can take some of the others. But at least one reproductive pair must stay here to ensure some data for our encyclopedia in the unlikely event that the return mission is unsuccessful.